Well, last week we began to discuss a major part in terms of a bishul, and that is the type of a kli, the type of a vessel, the type of a utensil that one is trying to affect bishulit. So the Gemara draws a distinction between a kli rishon in contrast to a kli sheni. So a kli rishon means either something that's sitting on the fire right now, you have a pot of water that's sitting on the fire, or even if it's no longer sitting on the fire, but at one time it was on the fire. So you turn the fire off, and you put it down on the table, but it's still in the original utensil, that's called the kli rishon. And here the Mishnah tells us that bishul for sure would be accomplished in a kli rishon. If you take a raw food and put it into a kli rishon, that's absolute bishul. There's one opinion possibly based on Yerushalmi, we spoke a little bit about last week, that maybe if the fire is off, maybe that's on a bishul midrabban, but even that's most probably not accepted. We assume that's the real makor, that's absolute bishul, as long as the pot that you're cooking in at one time was on the fire. In contrast, the Gemara tells us that kli sheni in mevashel. Once the contents of the pot have been emptied into a bowl, into a cup, etc., so then bishul no longer applies. So the question was, why should that be so? Where did this halachic phenomenon come from, that kli rishon affects bishul and kli sheni doesn't affect bishul? So we had a couple of different understandings that last week, and now we left off hanging really with the, I think we're up to number four. So last week we spoke a little bit about Yerushalmi and some other pshat and Tosfos pshat, and that was a fourth pshat, that it's hard to pinpoint who exactly said this pshat. Doesn't appear in Yerushalmi explicitly. Some of the later Acharonim already start to have it. I think the first time I ever saw this pshat was actually a footnote of Shimon Iger Sefer. It was a ha'ara that I don't know whether he said it on his own or quoted from everybody else. It's a pshat that's floating around in later Acharonim, although it doesn't say it explicitly in Yerushalmi. The reason why we differentiate between a kli rishon and a kli sheni is based on the idea of shelo kederech. We know that there's a principle that guides all of the Hilchos Shabbos, in a certain sense, all of Halacha for that matter, that generally speaking, the Torah speaks about normal situations. The Torah is addressing a person who does malachas in a normal fashion. So let's say, for example, if a person is a righty, if they write with their right hand, that's a malacha in the Torah. If they write with their left hand, that's not a malacha in the Torah. If a person carries on Shabbos, and you carry in your pocket, you carry in your hand in a normal fashion, that's a malacha deraisa. A person puts something on top of the hat or something, or sticks something under their arm and walks onto the street, that would at worst be a derabbanan. So there is a distinction in halacha between doing things in a normal fashion versus an abnormal fashion. Comes to Acharonim and say that cooking in a kli rishon is a normal way of cooking. Cooking in a kli sheni is a bizarre way of cooking. Who in their right mind would ever think in a million years that I'm going to take water out of the pot, put it into a bowl, and then put raw food into that bowl? That's crazy. It's not. Who would ever do things in that manner? And therefore that bishul is... reaches the point of not being a deraisa, dips down, and at worst, it's a derabon, it may even be mutal lechatchila. So again, we're going to have to flesh out a little bit about, practically speaking, how we apply kli sheni, but these are the different biurim that we have. So last week we spoke a little bit about maybe the reason why kli sheni is mutter is because kli rishon shelog avi esh maybe is a derabon in the first place. That was the first view of Yerushalmi. Then we suggested some who said that a kli rishon shelog avi esh is only a tolda. It's only a derivative of bishul, and therefore it's cliche, it's too far removed from the original model. We quoted last week Tosfos sheet in Shabbos that says, when you have a cliche, so the walls of the bowl are already cooling down the liquid, so that's why it becomes the Rabbanan. Then you have this fourth idea in Acharonim that maybe cliche is not considered to be a real Makor bishul because it's already Shaloki Derech bishul. As the sugya develops a little more, we're going to see that these four reasons are not just academic theoretical reasons, they are going to impact very, very much halacha. So if you'd walk away from last week's shiur and the first couple of minutes of this week's shiur, you'd say, great, cliche, and mevashel, gevaldik, this is fantastic. So I'll take all my hot water, put it right into a bowl, put it into a cup, and put whatever I want, all the raw food in the world, should be mutter, cliche, and mevashel, I follow exactly what it says in the Gemara. So it could be that you're right. It could be that that is the correct conclusion, but it could be that you're not right, based on two considerations. There is a Mishnah that we mentioned a little bit in passing last week. This Mishnah at the very end of Masechet Shabbos that speaks about certain kinds of food that are problematic of bishul, even though they're in klisheinis. What are those kinds of food? They're what's called kali habishul, things that are very, very easily cooked. If something is very, very easily cooked, then it becomes subject to a problem of bishul, even though you're already removed. Even though it's a klisheini, that would still pose a problem of a bishul. We can understand that very much based on reason number three or reason number four. If the reason why bishul can't take place at a kli sheni is because the funnels the karo, because the walls are cooling down, so when does that idea make sense? When you're talking about something that really requires a real heavy-duty bishul, something that's so easily cooked, maybe it could be so easily cooked even without a high degree of heat. Or if you go down the approach of number four, the approach we just mentioned before, that when something is in a cliché, that's called shaloka derech bishol. One could argue it's shaloka derech bishol on a big raw piece of meat, on something that really requires a heavy-duty bishol, something that's so easily cooked and can get cooked in such a simple manner, maybe even a cliché is called kederech bishol. So we can give a little bit of a lumdus why that's so, but the bottom line is the Mishnah says, the Perish Mishnah, that says that you're not permitted to cook anything that's called Kali Abishal, even in the cliché. The question becomes, what is Kali Abishal? What foods do we have today, what modern day foods do we have that would qualify as Kali Abishal? So the problem is, here Chazal give us a klal, they give us a rule, and they give us one or two examples, and we're not even sure what those examples are, and even after we have one or two examples, we're still not sure what the rule is. So what would qualify as Kali Abishal? So the Mishnah talks about Kulius Ispanin. So next time you want to cook a Kulius Ispanin, you know you can't do it in a cliché. Of course, we're going to do a Kulius Ispanin. So the Gemara speaks about a Dag Malia, that's kind of a salty fish. And that's about where all the that's where the examples end. So Rashi on the spot gives you the old French word for what some of these foods are. So Rashi writes, Tesvav Nun Yud Nun Alf, Tunina. So in case you think that means tuna fish, maybe you're right, and maybe you're wrong. I don't know what they call tuna fish in the Middle Ages. So whatever it was, Rashi is referring to one kind of fish, but again, that's meaningless for us. We have no idea what other foods would fall under this concern of Kali Abishal. So there is a Rishon, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Natan, his name was Belezim Mitz, who wrote the Sefer Yerayim. So the Sefer Yerayim, written by Belezim Mitz, so he throws his hands up and he says, you know, we have no idea what foods are Kali Abishal and what foods are not Kali Abishal. Ain't on the Bekiyan, we're not sure. And therefore, we have to err on the side of caution. We're dealing with the potential Malacha Deraisa Abishal. And therefore, in one fell swoop, Rabbi Elazar Mitz writes, unless you know for certain that it's not Kali Abishal, everything becomes a Suffolk Kali Abishal. And therefore, just a minute ago, everything was mutter in a kli sheni. Guess what? One fell swoop, everything just became also in a kli sheni. So it's literally the whole world turned around. That we thought, we read the Mishnah, so the starting point was all foods in the world are okay in a kli sheni, except for one or two. Says Rabbi Elazar Mitz, so we don't know what those one, two, three, four foods are. So therefore, everything becomes us until proven mutter. So that opinion of Rabbi Elazar Mitz is quoted by Halacha and Shulchan Aruch. And that's what we practice today. Now, we are very concerned. We do not want to just cook things in cliché, it's just like that, unless that food is a Kali Abishal. Unless we know to the contrary, unless we know for certain that it's not a Kali Abishal.
Why can't
we just see if it's reached by food? Well, it seems kind of hard to determine that. Like, how are you going to determine whether a tea bag reached by food or not? How are you going to determine whether other foods reached by food? It's hard to know.
Okay, but probably
knock
out like a whole...
Okay, I mean, a whole slew of things. Certain things would be... Okay, I don't know. So say if you're Ram, it wasn't true. He threw his hands up. He says, I'm not sure what Kali Abishal is. So if everything is also in a cliché. The idea Shalom, there's another reason why everything may be problematic in a cliché. Because there is a Gemara in Masechah Shabbos that also talks about potentially being a problem of cooking a cliché. And Tosus already is bothered with the problem, but the Gemara just said it's mutter. So Tosus quotes from the Rig, one of the Valiant Tosus, and says that the heter klisheni may only be on a deraisa level. It's not clear for the Gemara that heter klisheni works lemaisa, especially in light of the fact that if you hold a klisheni shaloka derech usually doesn't translate to mean mutter. Shaloka derech usually translates to mean mutter min atar, but also min derabonim. So it's not absolutely crystal clear from the Gemara that klisheni is really truly mutter. It could be mutter min haTorah, but still pose a problem halacha l'maaseh with the rabbanon because of a principle called mechtikim of Asher. It looks a little bit like Bishul, resembles Bishul a little bit, and therefore could become problematic. It's for these two reasons that the Gedolei Poskim can tell us that today we do not cook in cliché. We do not take the attitude, oh, it's a cliché, everything's great, everything's wonderful, and hope you do it, cook the cliché, as the Gemara says, for one of two reasons. Either because it's a suffix of Kali Abishal, or number two, there may be this Issa Derabanan that's lurking in the background. So we're going to avoid cliché needs at all costs. Can we possibly make matters better by creating a category called the cliché? Maybe we don't want to be making it a cliché. So what we'll do is we'll take the food out of the cliché and we'll pour it into a cliché, a third receptacle. And maybe at that point we'll say, great, then for sure it's going to be good. So what is the halacha about that? Do we have a right to say that once we reach the point of cliché, then everything is wonderful? So that's also not so clear at all. So Rabbi Shafeinstein writes in a tshuva that he thinks that is probably correct. it's probably true that klisheni maybe is mavasha klisheni. Klisheni maybe is mavasha klisheni. That's already everything's what the klisheni. According to that understanding of the Moshe, that it would come out that anything and everything you want to put absolute raw foods from scratch, you can put into a klisheni and everything is great, everything is wonderful. And others weren't so sure that was true. The Chazanish wasn't so sure that was true. The Rav wasn't so sure that's true. Many others, the Gedolia, Lady Gedolia Poskim, were concerned that the term klishlishi happens not to appear in the Gemara anywhere. There is no mention, no reference to klishlishi. The Rishon already have the phrase klishlishi, but in the Gemara itself it doesn't exist. So the Rav, before the Chazanish, both suggested that maybe when Chazal spoke about klisheni means klisheni and onwards. Klisheni is just a way of describing a non-klirisha. There is no halachic significance to putting into a third, fourth, 17th cup. It's all the same thing. I mean, if it's not a klisheni, then it's by definition a klisheni and beyond. If that's the case, so whenever we wouldn't want to do it in a klisheni, then we're not going to be comfortable doing it in a klishlish either. So that's why there are some poskim who said that, make up your mind. Either it's mutter to klisheni, or if you think it's also a klisheni, then just arbitrarily putting it into another cup is not going to do much. So we already have a few different svaras floating around, just in terms of what our take is on klirisha, klisheni, klishlish, etc. But now we have a really fundamental, a basic question, multiple questions, is that even within these categories of klirisha and klisheni, and even though in reality we're going to avoid cooking in a klisheni, but it's still not the same as klirisha. Let's not get carried away. Klirisha is an issa goma min haTorah. Klisheni is a chashash, a far-fetched chashash. Maybe it's kali yavishal. Maybe there's an issa rabbanan there. And there are a couple of reasons why we are going to practically refrain from cooking a klisheni, but still not the same. And therefore, it really behooves us, even at this point, to understand what precisely is a klirisha and what precisely is a klisheni. Because in a klirisha, we're going to have no negotiating, no wiggle room, nothing's going to be moved. No shah, no coolers, no sfakas, no sniffing, nothing. Klirisha, the shah, bishul, deraisa, forget about it. Once we enter into the domain of klisheni, so then we may find svaras and poskim like, well, maybe it's a of other reasons. Maybe it's a sfaka, maybe other shita. Once you start to enter into klisheni, where anyway it's very, very gray, whether it's ever in this at all the klisheni, we're going to be significantly more lenient in terms of practical shahs and hilchos bishul. So even though our starting point in halacha is not the cooking klishenis, it is important for us to know what's what. It's important for us to determine precisely what is and what is not a klishen. So one of the major controversies as to what is or what is not called a klishen is what's called iroi. Iroi means literally pouring. When something is in transit, you have a liquid in between a klirisha and a klisheni. So I know we have some hot water here, but I don't want to do an experiment, so that's not the best idea. So, but lu yitzuya that we had a good old-fashioned tea kettle to anyone under the age of 15. That's the way we used to heat up water before urns existed, called a chanyin, okay? So a tea kettle. So you take a tea kettle, and you pour the contents of that tea kettle into a cup, so then the tea kettle was the klirisha. The cup is a klisheni. What's the status of the water in transit? The water in that stream, that's what's called iroi. Does that water have the status of the kli that it emanated from, that it just exited? Namely, it's still called klirisha until it lands into the next cup. Otherwise, I say, no, once it exits the klirisha, it's already no longer klirisha. That's a big enough commitment. Let's say I have some raw food in the cup, and I want to pour boiling water onto the raw food. We'll give the raw food a name. We'll call it a tea bag. Tea bag is raw food. They're raw tea leaves. They're not yet been cooked, sitting inside this little bag. I want to pour boiling water from a tea kettle, or perhaps from an urn. The urn's a little bit later. I want to pour boiling water from a tea kettle. The ref will try to keep the iroi. I want to pour boiling water from a tea kettle onto a cup, and it's going to hit directly the tea leaves, directly onto the tea bag. So the question is, can I hide behind klisheni? And can I say, well, once the water left the klirisha, left the tea kettle, so this is worst case scenario klisheni. Klisheni, okay, we could discuss. Maybe it's a deraisa, maybe it's a derabana, maybe it's mutter. Other clues, I'll come up with a kunz why maybe it's mutter. But do I say, no, this is much worse than a klisheni. This is klirisha. This is the real McCoy. This is real bishul because the water has not yet landed in the klisheni. It hits the tea bag before it lands in the klisheni. And therefore, it's still considered halakhically to be part of the original kli. So that was a major, major dispute between the Rishonim, actually between two Balei HaTosfos, between two brothers of the Balei HaTosfos, between the Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam. I always tell Mashiach that whenever we get to this machlokes, we just spoke about him in a different context a couple of days ago. So whenever I quote this machlokes, Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam, I say, can you imagine what was going on at the table on Shabbos afternoon? They were sitting around lunch, And the Rashbam was a few years older than Rabbi Tam. So the Rashbam was, let's say, 9, Rabbi Tam was about 6 or so. So they were screaming and fighting and bringing riots back and forth from Maseches Vachim. Is he likely Rishon Lakhlisheni? Said exactly what took place at my Shabbos table when Meriach and Rabbi Zev were little. And the same arguments they were having. They were probably pouring things on one another, but they were discussing the Rashbam and Rabbi Tam were talking about what the status of Uri is. So we had a discussion like this. What's it based on? Why should we arbitrarily say one way, arbitrarily say another way? So actually, one of the riots with the primary source of this entire sugi is the sugi of Maseches Vachim. Those remember back to Yomi, it's still a while ago. There's been a lot in between Zvachim and that, a lot of creases, a lot of tumor, a lot of very, very, very hard sugyas. But back to the end of Maseches Vachim, so there is a sugya about Mariko Shtifa, where the Mishnah is coming from the Pesukim of Parshas Tzav, that if you cook kachim, you cook the korban in a pot, so then you have to kasher that pot, because a little bit of the meat of the korban goes into the walls of the pot, and then after a little bit of time, that meat becomes nosar. So you have a big problem. So you can't just keep on using the same pots over again. So the Torah says, "Umorik pshut of the mind." Every time you cook the korbanos, you have to constantly be kashering the pot. That's what the Torah teaches us. And if it's a kli cheres, if it's a earthenware vessel, so then it can't be kashered yishaver. That's the source for the dinim that you can't kasher cheres, you can't kasher your china because of that poskim bashes tzav. But otherwise, there's a din called mariko shtivas. So there was a whole discussion, a very lomdish's discussion, maseches vachim, about what's the din if you. If you, instead of cooking kachim in a pot, you have some kachim soup. So you have some kachim soup, that's a piece of meat, a piece of a korban that you cooked into a soup. So the pot has to be kashered eventually. But you poured some of that soup onto a bowl or something. You poured some of that soup onto another kli. So what's the status of that other kli? Do you have to do mariko shtif on the other kli or not? What's the shayla? The Torah says, the kli nechoshes bushala, umar kushut b'mayim. It says, this basha uses the lashon bishl. So the Gemara wants to know, is that called bishl or not? So bishl of the first pot that you cooked in, that has to be kashered. What about the pot that was poured in? What about the bowl that was poured into? What about the cup that was poured into? Is that included in the din of mariko shtifa not? So there was a whole discussion back and forth, the fossils fire. If the whole sugya ends, it's not clear how that impacts in our discussion. So some of the Rishonim brought a raya, the Rashbam brought a raya from that Gemara. You see from that Gemara that Iroi is basically like a cliche. Once the liquid exits the original pot, so that's over, finished, that's the end of discussion. And Rabbi Natan brought the raya from that exact same Gemara, the opposite direction. So Machlekes, Rabbi Natan, the Rashbam, they were fighting out briska Machlekes, Kachim Shaila. Exactly what was the pshat of that Gemara? The Chef of Meyachav, because they're up to that parent. That's exactly what they're learning now. They're learning the Sugis of Mariko Shtifa. So we told him this news, Ma'an just started. So he said that, I asked him what was Shira. His first day of Shira was last week on Thursday. So I asked him, what was the first day of Shira on? So he said, Rav David said, Shira on Mariko Shtifa. So he said, I asked, what'd he say? So he said, you know, between the Yiddish and the Longos and everything, you know, he was trying to reconstruct the Shira a little bit. So I didn't get the whole picture, but I started doing Mariko Shtifa. So I said, okay. I hope he knew more than I did about what he had to do. So he said he had a chazm of the shir. That time it was hard. It was hard opening shir, but it was mamish about the suyim rikur shtifa, about Rabbi Tam and the Rashbam. So anyway, back to the story. So in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, that's a real machlok. In terms of Hilchos Shabbos, says what is the status of the iroi? Is the iroi treated like a kli rishon, or is the iroi treated like a kli sheni? Big enough to be ladina. If a person wants to make tea on Shabbos, you want to take it out of your tea kettle and pour it onto the tea bag. So believe it or not, the Rashbam held that that's absolutely mutter. The Rashbam says, "Had the grommer, you're allowed to make tea." The Rashbam never saw a tea bag. Tea bags came from another part of the world. They never made it their way. I don't think they made it to France at that point yet in history. But if the Rashbam would have had a tea bag, so he would have said it's mutter lechatchila to make tea on Shabbos, to take a tea bag, put it into your cup, pour water from a tea kettle. Had the grommer. Why? Because Ibra is like a klisheni. And the Rashbam wasn't so concerned about the Kali Abishol, then he wasn't so worried that he assumed the Rabbon on it. If the Gov, you're allowed to make Tilech Hatchila on Shabbos, it's not a Kli Rishon, end of discussion. And his younger brother, Rabbi Tam, said that's an Issa Deraisa. He said that to make tea on Shabbos would be awesome in a Torah. Imagine the two brothers sitting at the table, one's making a cup of tea and the other saying, Shabbos, Shabbos, Skila, Skila. Rabbi Tam held that's considered to be Bishol. It's considered to be able to be mashal like a kli rishon. Rabbi Tam tones it down a little bit. Rabbi Tam says that iroi is not mamash like a kli rishon. It doesn't cook the entire food through and through. It cooks what's called in halacha kedei klipa. It cooks the outermost part of the food. But The problem is, that's still a problem. Anuchas Bishl on Shabbos, that's a problem. In your day, Anuchas Tarovas, that's important. But Anuchas Bishl, that's not all that relevant. So the bottom line is, according to the Rashbam, it's Mutl Chavchilon Mekhi on Shabbos, and according to the Red Atav, would be an Isidir Aizen.
Why would this not be
Kalei Bishl? We'll get there for a second. So again, so according to Rashbam, it's Mutl, according to Red Atav, you cannot make tea in a normal fashion by simply just pouring hot water onto it. Can you make tea in what's called a cliché? Can you take hot water and pour it into a cup and then put the tea bag in? So that sounds like it should be okay, because after all, we all know cliché and mavasha, right? Doesn't everybody know? The Gemara says the favorites, that cliché is okay. Well, not so simple. We just got finished saying a minute ago that cliché and mavasha is not an absolute trustworthy truth. Number one, there's a concern of Kalei Bishl. That's issue number one. Number two, maybe there's a concern with the Rabbanan. So maybe we have a problem. Maybe we have to prohibit making tea in a klisheni for two reasons. That number one, a concern, maybe it's a chashash of a deraisa because of a suffix Kalei Bishl. And number two, maybe it's a problem because it's a mechzik and a vash, it's a problem with the Rabbanan. So here it starts to get a little bit tricky, a little bit shaky for the following reason. The Mishnah says explicitly in the Sechah Shabbos that there are certain things that lamaisa, you're allowed to put into klisheni. The Mishnah actually gives an example of what's called tavlin. Spices. If you want to put spices into a pot of food, that's an isegum, that's an isederais, because it's klirisha. If you want to put spices onto food that's already sitting in your bowl, the Mishnah says, befeirish, that's mutter. So the Tosca point out that, for whatever deep, dark secret, spices clearly are not subject to these two concerns. That spices, by just objectively, are not Kalei Bishl. You see, from a minute, you can argue with the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, yitan l'sachol tavlin, you're allowed to put tavlin into the klisheni. So you see that for whatever reason, tavlin are not Kalei Bishl. And number two, you see that the Yisad Rabbanan was never made on tavlin. It must be that it's not so recognizable, it doesn't look like you're really cooking, it's such a small thing. So the Yisad Rabbanan was never instituted. So if something can meet the criteria of being called tavlin, then everything's good. Then you're good to go. Then it's at the Gomor. Then you can actually, lechetchila, even in Tavshinayin test, you can actually put tavlin into your cliche, as long as you've identified this tavlin. What is tavlin? What's not tavlin? So Reb Chaim was of the opinion that a tea bag is called tavlin. He said, what's a tea bag? It's a spice. It gives a little bit of spice to the water. I'm drinking a cup of hot water. It doesn't taste very good, the hot water. So I throw a little bit of raspberry zinger or something. Chaim didn't have no raspberry zinger teas. He didn't have any chamomile teas. He had good plain old black tea bags. He didn't have no black tea bags. He had black tea leaves. And Reb Chaim Brisk didn't have no tea bags. So, the brisket tea. There you go. That's a good line. I did not realize that. And a very, very good line. Thank you, Mehud, for that one. That was a give you credit for that one. Okay. So, Reb Chaim held that tea leaves, or the modern day equivalent tea bags, are not considered to be anything more than tavlin. And therefore, not only are they mutter min haTorah, and if we share their mutter even lechatchila, there's no suffering of Kalei Bishl, and there's no suffering in the Isidra Bar Matzil Bashel. Mutter lechatchila shebechila to make tea in a klisheni. And that was the Reb Chaim hold this. Theoretically, Reb Chaim did this practically. There's Yadum of Forsum, and it's known that Reb Chaim held this way in his own life. He would actually make tea in a klisheni on Shabbos. Fascinating enough to comment that the Mishnah Berurah was Eish Lahofa against this, was vehemently opposed to this practice. He doesn't quote Reb Chaim. I don't know whether the Mishnah Berurah knew that Reb Chaim was doing this, but they were contemporaries, but you know, word didn't travel so fast in those days. So the Chofetz Chaim and the same Mishnah Berurah writes that if a person makes tea in a klisheni, it's a shayla of an issa skila. It's a sofi, he's not convinced. It's a sofik chol Shabbos deraisa. Why? He says, because it's a chashash of Kalei Bishl. Shavur says that tea bags are considered to be a suffix of Kalei Bishl, and therefore under no circumstances can you do it. It's not subject to the leniency to the exception of the rule of tavlin. Tea is not tavlin. Finish, end of discussion. Why is tea not tavlin? Chaim sounds like he has a good argument. Why isn't tea bags automatically called tavlin? So Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted in the Sefer Shabbos B'chosa saying that tavlin of old were not with tavlin of today. We think of tavlin, you think of, what's it called, the McCormick? Is that the name? Yes. You think of going to the store, your wife sends you to the store to go buy a crushed something or other. So inevitably you bring home the wrong one. That was in the old days. I would usually bring home about three or four that I thought were similar and then hope for the best. Now, Baruch Hashem, thanks to texting, and that's the only time you can get that out of me, thanks to texting. Thanks, then they get a quick picture of the tavlin, and exactly, you know, I've been caught many, many times FaceTiming in the aisles of Grand and Essex trying to get the right tavlin. And sure, so that tavlin in the old days was not that. Tavlin was a big piece of ginger, a big piece of cinnamon, a you know, Rulis Kavet, a big, big piece of stuff like that was done. He says, Rosh Hashanah, that makes a lot of sense. That's not Kali HaBishul. You ever see, try to cook a big stick of ginger? It'll take you forever. But says Rosh Hashanah, our tavlin today, they're ground up. They're so fine. They're so small. Our tilis, I don't know whether you would have a big fat tili. I don't think that exists. But if you had a big fat tili, maybe that would be called tavlin. Today, our tili, it's made up of little tiny things. Kali HaBishul Mod Mizeh. I would say, as Judah said, this is the ultimate Kali HaBishul. Horaya, give me a proof positive this is the ultimate Kali HaBishul. That's a, everyone makes a cup of tea that way. I make a cup of tea in a cliche on a Tuesday also. I mean, that's a normal cooking. That's a normal way of bishul. So it's very, very hard to hide behind tablet. But Reb Chaim held that way. Reb Chaim held that it's mutl l'chatchila to make tea in a cliche. And again, Mr. Guru was eish lohava, was vehemently opposed to it. As a chshayla with their isa, a chshayla made this of the rabbanon. Under no circumstances to make tea in a cliche. So most people follow the practice of the Mishnah Berurah, except for those who have this particular tradition for Reb Chaim. Those who have the tradition of Reb Chaim include many people with less than salvation. I don't know, we have to check, but you know, something, even within the world of salvatics, you don't know which messers exactly made it down to which parts. You know, there were different branches of the salvatic family. So next time I'm in Bristol, I have to check what's going on Shabbos, the tea, I don't know. But the salvatics, they made it to America, so they did follow this practice, the Kula, and the Yadua, that the Rav held this way, that he held like his grandfather, he held like Reb Chaim, that one is l'chatchila permitted to make tea in a cliché. You know, take a... to go to your tea kettle, pour water into your cup, take a tea bag, put it in his mutlach hatchila. That was the view of Reb Chaim. What most other people would consider to be a very, very serious concern in terms of the shayla, even with their eyes, possibly a bishul. That was the Rav's practice. There is a famous story that's quoted that one of the Talmidim of the Rav was at a little bit of chutzpah, and they asked the Rav, they said, Rebbe, you know, when they saw him make me tea on Shabbos, they asked him, Rebbe, you know, isn't that, Mishnah Berurah said that that's also? So there are two different versions that I heard what the Rav's response was. One response was that he said that my grandfather knew how to learn also. He said, you don't bother with the Mishnah Berurah, but Reb Chaim was mutter. And the other version was, my grandfather was also a Shomer Shabbos. So either one's the same basic idea, that he wasn't so disturbed the fact that the Mishnah Berurah disagreed. But again, those who have that particular tradition that they follow, those shittas that are familiar with the world of brisk. So those who want to follow the brisk is, you want to have tea on Shabbos, that's fine, but Shabbos probably hasn't ended yet, according to the brisk. And one thing I can tell you, that you can't carry that cup of tea outside anywhere, that's for sure. So you may want to, I can tell you a lot of other chumers very, very quickly, but we'll leave it out. So it may be worth it to make it to tea a little bit differently. But those who have the traditions from the Soloveitchiks, they'll continue to follow their traditions. Those who don't have that particular kula, so we follow probably a more conventional approach, is the approach of the Mishnah Berurah and the later those can take, is that one should avoid making tea in a cliché. So now the question becomes, what about making into a cliché? Can we make things a little bit better? We'll pour the hot water, one cup over to a cliché, and that should be great. Because Reb Moshe said that was okay. Because Reb Moshe held that cliché, everything is mutter. So if it was correct, that the Manashach, according to the Rav, it's mutter because the cliché is also mutter. And according to Reb Moshe, it's mutter because the cliché is mutter. The problem is, there are a lot of, Reb Moshe and the Rav, the Israeli post of the generation, but there are a lot of other people who have what to say about this topic, including the Chazanish, including others. And it would seem, again, it's hard for me to always, we spoke yesterday about Rove, when you start to add up and say Rove postkim, it's hard to always make that citation, but it would appear that both of these shitas were a little bit das yachid. Reb Chaim was a little bit das yachid, and Reb Moshe's chiddush about klishlish was a little bit das yachid. Many postkim were not so thrilled with this idea of Reb Moshe, not so close. Reb Moshe himself was also a little bit mistaken about it, and in the end, he's made from Hakel. But others disagree with it, Chazanish disagree, others disagree with it, and therefore I'm not so quick to tell people, yeah, I can make it a klishlishi and you're good to go. But it's true, you're good to go, bein lefi Reb Moshe, bein lefi Rav, each one for a different reason. According to the Rav, even klishlishi is mutter, according to Reb Moshe, klishlishi is at least mutter. But a lot of poskim didn't buy either one of these kulas. Therefore, the Mishnah Berurah included, the Mishnah Berurah doesn't mention klishlishi, and the Mishnah Berurah was an eish lohava against klishlishi. Lefini is night again. Those who have a specific tzach for Reb Moshe, they follow that practice of Reb Moshe, those talmidim Reb Moshe, tavalechem bracha. Those who don't have a clear cut mesora about how to make tea on Shabbos, it would appear to me that the more correct way to make tea on Shabbos is neither of the above. And one should try to avoid making tea in a klisheni, one should try to avoid making tea in a klishlish as well. How can you make tea on Shabbos? So you have to invoke a whole other principle, namely you have to use pre-made tea, sense. Again, that's a whole other story, Mishlach HaBishul. Hope we'll talk about that in coming shiurim. But just to hide behind eerie of the Rashbam, that's very, very weary, just to hide behind the cliche in me, again, unless you're a really, really Reb Chaim person, to hide behind cliche, unless you're really a Reb Moshe person. It would appear that the consensus, probably, of most of the other poskim was not really to rely on either one of these tikkunos. I'll close the story. I think, I don't know if I told the story yet in the Vishal Shur about the Gabi, the girl in my teeth, Shaloka did on Shabbos. No, I don't think I said it. Okay, I've told it over in the past, but I told it over in the Shiva recently because we were talking about Iwari in terms of your day a couple of days ago. So I was, many, many years ago, I was in Bachar, I was at somebody's house there to show up for Shabbos, and father asked his teenage daughter to make him a cup, bring him a cup of tea, and she made a mistake, and she went and took water right out of the kettle, out of the urn or something, she made it. She did what the Rashbam would say as mutter, but nice, nobody else in the last 800 years would have done. So the father got, you know, all startled. Hey, 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 hey. So he turned to me and he said, am I allowed to even drink the tea b'di'evid? So I said, it's not so terrible b'di'evid, because there's a Magen Avraham that says, whenever there's a machlokes about whether something's mutter or asur l'chatchila, so b'di'evid, you're allowed to rely on the mekilim. Maisa Shabbos, having something that was put in Shabbos to eat it is only a derabbanan anyway. The yisur of Maisa Shabbos is only a yisur derabbanan. We rely on the mekilim after the fact. I said to him, I said that since according to the Rashbam, your daughter was hetakomor, so b'di'evid is allowed to drink the tea. So remember his response was, I don't want to be a b'di'evid Jew, I want to be a l'chatchila Jew when we threw the cup of tea out. Okay, that was the end of the story. So I felt bad because a few years later, I realized that the Chazanish says that you shouldn't rely on the Rashbam even b'di'evid. The Rashbam was such a das yachid, such a das yachid, that you shouldn't even rely on even b'di'evid. So I felt bad. I didn't feel so bad because he didn't eat the tree anyway, but I felt bad I gave him the wrong psach. Then years later, I felt better because Rabbi Willick said that he didn't understand the Chazanish. He said, why should it be that the Rashbam is just a das yachid? The Rashbam wasn't such a das yachid. Other Mishnah, by the way, also. So Rabbi Willick thought that maybe the other tea would be good. Again, it didn't make much of a difference because the tea was spilled out years before anyway. But the story had an interesting ending to it because, like all stories, at least in our world, in our house, all stories relate to Shidduchim in some shape or form. And we have a klal. We have a Masorah in our family that from Rabbi Hulig that says you have to be nice to everybody. You should always be nice to everybody. You have to be nice to everybody because you never know who your mechutanim are going to be. So who your mechutanim's friends are going to be. So you have to always be careful. You always want to put on your best for everybody. Anyway. But it's another story. Enough of that. But back to the story. So years later, I get a call from somebody about one of the children of this family. Not the girl who was maybe Michal Shaf, but the brother. They wanted to know for Shidduchim about this boy. So I knew the family from a while back. So I said, a wonderful family. I said, let me just encapsulate the essence of this family. This is a family that wants to live their lives l'chatchila, not for the evidence. They told the story about, the person didn't know what I was talking about. I said, this person wanted l'chatchila, not for the evidence. And that's really what this family is about. They're l'chatchila yids, not for the evidence. So I have no idea whether the couple ever got married or not, but you never know. Sometimes a safi chil Shabbos can impact on a shidduch, so you got to be careful. You got to be careful what you say in shidduchim, you got to be careful what you do on the table. So, but again, how to make tea on Shabbos, so any possibility. Rashbam, the Rishon, Rav Chaim, the Sheni, Rav Moshe, the Shlishi, and everybody else, probably not at all. So hopefully next week, we'll try to continue some more.